2022 meeting of the Historic Preservation Commission. The purpose of this commission is to provide for the protection, enhancement, and perpetuity of areas having special historical, cultural, and aesthetic interest or value in the order to promote the health, prosperity, and general welfare of the people. The preservation of this heritage is basic and vital importance to the development and maintenance of the community's culture and for the protection of property values because of their association with history. This commission, appointed by City Council, is not affiliated with any for-profit or nonprofit organization. The preservation standards, visual compatibility factors, design standards are as set forth by the City of Savannah zoning ordinance are used by the board to determine the compatibility of the proposed changes and new development visually from public right-of-way, including streets, lanes, and sidewalks. Within Savannah's local historic and conservation districts, this board cannot consider criteria not specifically identified within the ordinance. Items such as land use, landscaping, parking availability, traffic, noise, impact on property values, or interior arrangement of the structure are not within the borough's purview and cannot be a factor in the issuing or denial of a certificate of appropriateness. Similarly, personal preferences will not be the basis for decision. Please turn off all cell phones. Please mute your mic until you're called upon to speak. Each board member must say their name when you speak and when you vote on an item. Will the members present please identify themselves by name for the record? We will start to my left with Ms. May.
May Boley.
Darren Bagley-Heath.
Kirsten Connor.
Kathy Litvina.
Rebecca Fenwick.
Thank you. Signs posting. Members of the board receive an electronic agenda the week before the meeting and individually visit the sites of the projects. If a project is not properly posted, it is removed from the agenda and rescheduled. Are there any projects that were not properly posted this month? Members of the board. Were there any found by staff?
No.
Nope. We'll move on to the consent agenda. These agenda items have been found by the preservation officer to be in accordance with the preservation standards, visually compatible factors and design standards, and have the apparent consensus of no known objections from the public. Is there any member of the public or the board who wishes to remove an item from the consent agenda to the regular agenda?
Kathy Litvina, I would like to remove 506 East 40th Street from the consent agenda.
That's item 8.
And where would you like it, Ms. Chairwoman? Where would you like it on the regular agenda?
We will place it as the first item on the regular agenda for the streetcar district. Are there any other items to be moved? Hearing none, can I have a motion to approve the consent agenda?
This is Darren Bagley-Heath. I propose to approve the consent agenda.
And a second, please.
May Boley, I second that.
We will start to my left with the vote.
Approve, Rebecca Fenwick.
Kathy Litvina, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Thank you. May I have a motion to adopt the agenda as posted?
Kathy Levina, I make a motion to approve the current agenda.
Rebecca Fenwick, I second.
Okay, May, we will start with you, please. Can I have a vote?
Approve.
Darren Bagley Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Thank you. If there's anyone in the audience that is here for an item that is on the consent agenda that has not been moved to the regular agenda, you are free to leave if you would like. Moving on, the approval of the minutes of the previous meeting. The minutes from the previous meeting are attached to the agenda. They are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Hearing none, I ask for a motion to approve the minutes.
May Boley, motion to approve the minutes.
A second, please.
Kirsten Connor, I second.
Rebecca, we will start with you.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Darren Bagley Heath, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Are there any items to be removed from the final agenda?
Not from staff.
Okay. So I need a motion to approve that there are no items to be removed from the final agenda. I can skip that? Really? Okay, Pam's gonna call in a minute. The continued agenda. These are items that have been continued, deferred to the next meeting or to a date certain. Are there any staff determinations that are incomplete at this time?
I will just let you know that today I received an email to withdraw 1001 Whitaker Street. But obviously the final agenda had already been published, so you'll see that withdrawn next month.
Which one was it?
Number 15.
Oh, okay.
1001 Whitaker Street.
Can I have a motion to approve the continued agenda excluding item 15, which was requested?
It's Rebecca Fenwick. I propose we approve the continued agenda minus item number 15.
Kathy Levina, I second.
May, we will start with you.
May Boley, approve.
Darren Bagley Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Kathy Levina, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
We have no request for extensions, so we will move on to the regular agenda. The presentation of an application with recommendations from the staff, where there are questions or concerns from the petitioner.
All right. Thank you. This is Leah. The applicant is requesting approval for the demolition of two non-contributing structures, which I'll show you in a bit, at 412 West 42nd Street and 414 West 42nd Street, as well as for new construction, Part 1 height and mass, for a four-story mixed-use building for the property located at 2613 Montgomery Street. And the applicant is requesting a special exception from the standard within 5.13.5 development standards for permitted uses, which reads TC1, building footprint, maximum square foot, 5,500 square feet, to allow for a larger footprint of 15,570 square feet. And the applicant is requesting a recommendation for a variance to the Zoning Board of Appeals from the standard within 5.13.5 development standards for permitted uses, which reads TC1, height max, three stories up to 45 feet,
to allow for four stories within the maximum building height of 45 feet. Regarding the findings for the demolition of the two buildings, so this is the parcel proposed for the new construction. Over here across the street are the two buildings that are proposed for demolition, and this is proposed to become a surface parking lot to service the new construction. So the two buildings, they are shown as non-contributing structures on the streetcar contributing resources map. This is 412 and this is 414, or might be vice versa. We do want to mention, we're going to show you some research that we did after receiving this application, because the site, at last staff knew it, had at least seven structures on it. The site proposed here for the new building. And then when we saw, we saw it in person, it's completely clear. So at least seven buildings were removed from that site without permits or a COA. So that's going to be a whole different issue. So right at this moment, we're going to look at the requested demolition for those two buildings that I mentioned first. So again, this is staff's research, figuring out what buildings were demolished. So it was at a minimum all of the ones shown here with these addresses. This is some previous 2019 street views of that site, and this is now. All right. So with regard to the standards for demolition, I'm just going to show you these two buildings again. Evaluation is required for any non-contributing resources proposed to be demolished to review them for potential contributing status. And there's four criteria. One, that the buildings are associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of our history, are associated with the lives of significant persons in our past, embody the distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, or that represent the work of a master, or that possess high artistic value, or that represent a significant and distinguishable entity whose components may lack individual distinction. And four, have yielded or may be likely to yield information important in history or prehistory. So those are the four criteria, and staff evaluated these two resources against that criteria. And staff finds that 412 and 414 do not meet the standards for contributing resource or a resource for exceptional importance. They were constructed circa 1930, but have been altered over time, and staff does not believe that they contain any architectural details. I mean, there may be, as you can see, some siding. And this may be, we looked at them out there, but there's really not any features remaining, if there were any to begin with. And again, no information was provided regarding the previously existing buildings on the other parcel. We did receive an application a couple days ago, COA application for the after the fact demolition of these buildings. But after the staff recommendation came out last week, we received it this week, but obviously we couldn't put it on this agenda. So that's going to be something we'll have to address in the future. So this is the proposed site plan. This is the proposed parking lot where the two buildings we just talked about. Here is the parcel, here's the new building footprint.
So with regard to special exceptions, to increase the maximum building footprint is applicable special exception to be reviewed and approved or denied by you all. So the applicant is requesting, again, to increase the maximum footprint permitted in TC1 from 5,500 square feet to 15,570 square feet. The criteria for a special exception are two: whether the use for which the special exception is being considered will be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of this ordinance, and two, whether the special exception would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or general vicinity. And staff finds that the criteria for a special exception are not met. The streetcar historic district overlay does not provide for an instance in which buildings with firewalls are considered multiple buildings, as stipulated in the downtown historic district. And I want to elaborate on that. For large scale developments and in the downtown historic district, there is a specific standard regarding footprint size that says, there's a maximum footprint size per building code. And that's what it says for large scale development in the downtown district. This maximum footprint standard for this district does not say that. It just says maximum footprint size of 5,500 square feet. There's no stipulation about, per building code separated by firewalls, anything like that. I just want to clear up where that sort of information is going to be coming from. Therefore, this would be considered a single building with one large footprint, and the proposed footprint is approximately 10,000 square feet over what is permitted in this district. The current streetcar zoning overlay district adopted these standards with the new zoning ordinance in September 1st, 2019, in order to encourage development that is in scale and compatible with the surrounding zoning and historic district. The special exception would not be located, operated, or maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan or zoning ordinance. Staff recommends denial of the special exception. With regard to the variance recommendation and the variance criteria, again, that is to allow four stories instead of three within the I think I wrote the wrong page number down. This is what I'm looking for. So here are the context elevations in context with the contributing buildings that are visually related. I do want to express that that many of you all surely have seen the large buildings similar to this going up or have gone up in this general vicinity. Victory Village, if you're aware, it has its own appendix in the zoning ordinance that was created for that site before the new zoning ordinance. It has its own standards. These standards in this ordinance don't apply to it. In a larger project under construction now, a couple of them, in fact, further up on Montgomery were approved under the old zoning ordinance, which did not have maximum footprint standard, at least not the 5,500. I think it was 10,000, maybe. I can't recall offhand. So obviously the ordinance is different now. So with regard to the variance and the overall height, 45 feet overall height is permitted. However, it specifically states three stories. My apologies, I do not know what's going on with our technology. So the building is proposed to be 45 feet, but it's four stories. So they're looking for a recommendation for a variance to allow that. You all, because of what section that standard is in, you actually all can't grant a special exception. That is within the base zoning. So you will be making a recommendation to the Zoning Board of Appeals from that one. So there are several criteria for that recommendation. The first one is
The variance shall be consistent with the intent of the ordinance and the comprehensive plan and shall not be injurious to the neighborhood or otherwise detrimental to the public health, safety, or welfare. Again, the applicant is requesting a variance to allow for four stories within 45 feet. The variance would mean that the building is unable to meet the floor-to-floor height design standards, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And while it remains within the 45 feet maximum height as set by the ordinance, staff finds that this is not in character with the district or with the intent of the ordinance. Special conditions or circumstances exist which are peculiar to the land, buildings, or structures involved, which are not applicable to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same zoning district. The special conditions or circumstances do not result from the actions of the applicant. The special conditions or circumstances are not purely financial in nature, so as to allow the applicant to use the land, buildings, or structures involved more profitably or to save money. Staff finds there are no special conditions of the site and that the variance would be primarily due to the actions of the applicant and is likely financial in nature. The literal interpretation of the provisions of the regulations would deprive the applicant of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district under the terms of this ordinance and would result in unreasonable hardship on the applicant. The literal interpretation of the ordinance would not, in this case, deprive the applicants of rights commonly enjoyed by other properties in the same zoning district and obviously under the current zoning ordinance. No other buildings or properties in this district under the current zoning ordinance are as have been as large as requested. We have not had this under the new zoning ordinance. The variance, if granted, shall be the minimum variance necessary to make possible and reasonable use of the land, buildings, or structures. Variance is not necessary to make reasonable use of this land. The variance shall not confer on the applicant's property any special privilege that is denied by this ordinance to other lands, buildings, or structures in the same zoning district. Obviously, this would confer a special privilege on the property that would be denied by the ordinance to others. All right, so now we're going to move on to the Part 1 height and mass standards for new construction and regarding the base zoning districts for TC1. Again, this falls under that portion of the ordinance and that the building footprint maximum is 5,500. And as you all know, that standard isn't met and they've applied for a special exception. Same thing applies for the height, three stories up to 45 feet. They've requested a variance to recommendation to allow for four stories. See if my technology is working again. Okay. In addition, we wanted to bring up something that isn't under your purview, but is good for additional information. The applicant, as I mentioned, is proposing to establish a parking area where the two buildings are proposed to be demolished. Under Article 5 for base zoning, within the principal use table, a parking facility is permitted by special use only, so they would have to go to the Planning Commission and be granted as a special use permit to create a parking lot there. With regard to visual compatibility, I know this is lengthy, so bear with me. There's a lot of components to this project. With regard to the visual compatibility for height, width, scale, and rhythm of the building, the new building is proposed to have a 15,570 square foot footprint and 45 feet in height. Is to extend the entirety of the block facing Montgomery Street and the majority of the block facing 43rd Street. The adjacent buildings, as you can see in this context elevation, are all 1 to 2 stories tall. New construction buildings approved in the recent past of similar scale to the proposed building were again implemented under previous ordinance or are their own ordinance section as Victory Village and cannot and should not be used as buildings to which this proposed building visually relates, especially since obviously visual compatibility only pertains to contributing structures. Excuse me. Additionally, while there is some articulation along the facade, staff finds that a building fronting this much of the block is not a compatible feature within the district. Overall, staff finds the scale and width of the building to not be visually compatible with the surrounding contributing buildings and structures. With regard to design standards and height and mass, the height and mass shall be subdivided both horizontally and vertically to convey human scale and visual interest that reflects the traditional size of buildings.
staff finds the standard not to be met. They're not subdivided horizontally. I mean, I think some parts you could argue that it is, and obviously do not reflect the traditional size of buildings, nor convey a human scale. The exterior expression of the height of the first story shall not be less than 13 feet. They're proposing 10 feet, 8 inches, which is obviously how they're getting the four stories within the 45 feet. So that standard is not met. Staff is recommending denial of the demolition of the two non-contributing structures, as well as for new construction part one height and mass for a four-story mixed-use building for the property located at 2613 Montgomery Street, because the project is not visually compatible and does not meet the design standards, and denial of the special exception from the standard within 5.13.5 for a maximum footprint of 5,500 square feet, and denial of variance from the standard regarding height and three stories up to 45 feet, which would allow for four stories within the 45 feet. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Leah, y'all are recommending denial of the demolition because it's not time, because we don't know what this project is going to look like, and we are deferring that decision until we have a design that...
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
We also do not find a principal use parking lot visually compatible.
Copy.
Anyone else have questions of staff? Is the petitioner present?
Yes. And if I needed to switch back, what do I do?
So it's just down here at the bottom.
Okay. Hi, good afternoon, Madam Chairwoman and all the members of the board. I know it's a late evening, so I'll try to keep this short.
Please identify yourself for the record.
Jerome Elder, architect. And I wanted to thank everyone for the opportunity to talk about this project. It is a pretty peculiar project in terms of location, the current things that we're asking for the variance and also for the special exception. However, one thing that we're extremely excited about is the opportunity to add to the development of Montgomery Street and that Montgomery Street corridor. For us and for the developer, who is a local Savannian with quite a few businesses in Savannah and lives and operates them here, they saw the opportunity in purchasing these properties. And I'll just jump quickly to express this. Well, how do I do this? So the developer is purchasing multiple properties all as one sale. So it's being sold as one together, and it's 11 properties, three of which have buildings on them. Well, the two that we are asking for demolition of. Three of the buildings are contributing structures, and they plan on rehabilitating those structures and getting them back to being ready to be apartments again. So there's a duplex, and there are two single family apartments, and those will continue to be used as those. And with that, as you saw previously, presented by Leah, these sites right here, so number 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8, are currently just a cleared parking lot. In its past, there was a mechanic shop and a tire and garage shop. That's what we learned through the Sanborn maps. And otherwise, the site has really been not developed as much. So currently it is a large cleared site, and it's also at the point where you have Victory Drive coming in to this district. So it's the southern entrance point to the district. And one thing that we want to try and do and establish is bringing people into it, and also balancing Victory Village to the south, and starting that new change to reactivate and continue the development of Montgomery Street. With that, one thing that I'd also mention is that the majority of lots around here are all TC1. And because these are all individual plots of land, they more than likely wouldn't have been considered for TC2, but within the zoning ordinance for this district, TC2 properties actually are allowed up to 10,000 square feet, not the 5,500 in TC1. And many of the TC2s are located along Montgomery Street and at corners. For us, we believe that this particular location for this site is one that has that opportunity to have that larger footprint, to welcome people into the neighborhood, and also create new activity on the street, bringing in commercial, and in particular to food and beverage establishments within this first floor. We believe we'll continue to attract, activate the streets in that area, and we'll continue to add to the streetscape, which, as you would have seen in the earlier pictures of the existing site, there's very little that has been done to that streetscape all around. So here's a view from if you were standing at the corner of MLK and Victory, and you're looking out towards the site. Over to your right is Victory Village, but you can see here, this is our building. We're actually about 68 feet away from the building that's contributing at the corner. Then here is another view as if you were looking up Montgomery Street, standing closer to the corner of Montgomery and Victory Street. And you can also see that what we attempted to do is, even though it is a large building, divide it into three main masses, of which the two that are facing contributing buildings, we created a setback and also tried to have a three-story mass with that rooftop. And I'll go here again. This also shows you how far it is from that contributing structure. For us, one thing that we are hoping for from the board is for that consideration for the four stories within the 45 feet. We believe that we are staying true to a height and a mass that is not overpowering the neighborhood. If we were to go, and I can show you here in an axonometric view, I'm not sure how to go through these pages quickly. This is, this is our building. And you can see the contributing structures. There's Victory Village, building three, I believe, and one up two. But you can tell that in terms of scale, it is not anywhere as large as those buildings. So for us, we're trying to keep with that and be able to develop this land to give more density, more opportunities for apartments. And it will be apartments for the neighborhood and bring in that activation. So we hope that you'd consider that in your discussion and decision. And if you have any questions, I'm here to answer. Thank you.
Are there any questions of the petitioner?
Ms. Rebecca Fenwick, I have a question. So it seemed like from your narrative that the current owner purchased the property recently. So if that's the case, do you have any knowledge of what happened to those buildings that were lost?
Well, they're finalizing the purchase right now. Okay. And the current owner, so the seller, they cleared the site prior to any of this occurring before they even put it up for sale. There was a request, from my understanding, from the city for them to clean up the site after they acquired the property. And as in a request to clear all of that site where the parking and the garage and everything else was on this part of the site. Let me just jump quickly to this one. So they are requested to clear this site. As Leah mentioned, they did submit their after the fact submission for the demolition of the structures. There was a structure in lot 5 here that was just that was where the mechanic garage was, and it was just a single story non-contributing building, and all the other buildings on it were trailers, from our understanding. Okay. So
well, and I think we'll end up discussing it more at a later date, but I appreciate that additional information. Actually, I had another question related to the design. It's actually two-parter. So one, did you consider breaking up the mass into multiple buildings? And two, what, if any, historic buildings in the surrounding context were you using as inspiration or influence or?
Historic buildings is what you asked? Okay.
Correct.
So yes, we did explore multiple ways of breaking this building up. Parts of what occurred is that we ended up with, it still felt like a very large continuous building across the lot. It's very difficult in a lot of this size to separate the buildings and meet all the different requirements with very large gaps and make it still not seem like it was a large fronting building. But in terms of historical context, we looked at the Sisters Court building that's on 37th Street. I believe it's 222 East 37th Street. And that building, it does also have an addition, which is non-historic. I'm not sure if it's part considered contributing now, the addition, but that is a largest footprint building. It is continuous along that block. And I think many of you all will be familiar with it. I don't have my full presentation here, but please.
What do you think that the address is?
222 East.
Yeah, I know what building you're talking about. I just don't know its address. No. 222
East 37th Street.
And just for your information, this addition was constructed in the last 5 years, but replaced an addition from the 90s.
And as you can see, it is a very large fronting building. It is apartments. This connection here, that bridge between the two, exists. What we attempted to do in our design was to create, and I'll just identify it here in the design, deep recesses. Here, we did put porches on them, but deep recesses that start breaking up those masses in order for us to get that. That's partially how we started to develop our form. And that's where we got to here. So.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions of the petitioner?
I have one. Is the desire to have 4 floors instead of 3 just based on the number of units?
No, not exactly. It is, it's driven by, as we were developing it, as we were discussing with the different members of the community and looking at the needs of this area, it was that we wanted to get more density and we wanted to bring in the commercial activation. And so what we went for is for the larger of the two. And also the part of what we also looked at here was the with the density was that the site itself actually allows for quite a few more units than what we're showing. But we plan to keep the units to this because we didn't want to make the building any larger. We didn't see the need to.
You mentioned that you had spoken with neighborhood groups. Who did you actually meet with?
Reached out to a few different neighbors, have reached out after we posted on Facebook and the Neighborhood Facebook Association.
Did you have in-person meetings?
No, we were unable to based on the time frame in which we started the project to where we submitted.
So you simply posted it on Facebook?
Yes.
Okay. I don't think that's engaging the community.
I understand. And we will be moving forward planning to continue to engage with the community. We have reached out further, and so far comments that we've been receiving, calls that we've been receiving, have been positive for the project. I know that there'll be others that will have questions, and the developer are ready and willing to sit and work with the community to really make this something that would be wonderful for the community.
Okay. Is there anyone from the public that would like to make a statement or ask questions? Do we have Ryan on the line?
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, thank you. Ryan Arve, Historic Savannah Foundation. Given the lateness of the hour, I'll be brief. We wholeheartedly agree with staff on this. We praise them for their work they've done on this and the research that they've committed to it. We really think that they've covered all bases. On behalf of our ARC, we also encourage commission members to deny these requests based solely on visual incompatibility on so many levels. The project is too large. Its immediate context is dwarfed. And I think you can cherry pick larger scale projects here and there. As Leah pointed out in her presentation, the Victory Village really shouldn't be referenced because it falls outside the district and certainly the NUZO at the time that it was built. And if you look at the immediate surrounding context, which is what is most vital, these buildings are just too large. I won't even comment on the architectural direction at this time because it's only a part one. But one of the things that this commission, as I know you know, has to be careful of with your charge, and that is setting precedent. And just a big no from us. So thank you very much.
Okay. Who's next? Go ahead.
Sorry, it's me again. Susan Larson-Heise. And I've been asked by a group I work with that works with the unhomed, unroofed community. And we were wondering if this would be part of an affordability housing complex or if this was a for-profit housing complex.
That is not something that is under the purview of this commission.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thank you for letting me ask the question. And who would I ask that question of?
You would have to direct it to the applicant.
Yeah, we can let him answer that, but obviously it doesn't have any bearing on, you know.
Okay. May I ask him? Is he online?
Yes, I can answer. Thank you for that question. It is not a full one of the projects that will be considered the affordable housing. However, it is going to just be the standard market rate apartment.
So, okay.
And just to let you know, the duplexes that will be developed, those will continue to also be the same as where they were right now as standard apartments within the neighborhood.
I did not hear you. I'm sorry, board. I did not hear him say duplexes when he was giving his description. I just heard apartments.
Oh, it's not part of this submission. It's just existing buildings that the developer would be.
The duplexes are other pieces of property that are not included in the consideration of today.
Okay, sorry. I thought I missed something or blinked. Okay, thank you for allowing me to ask my question.
Do we have anyone else online? Okay, anyone from the gallery?
Good afternoon. My name is Jason Combs. I'm the current.
You got it. I am the current president of the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association. Because it is applicable to this project, I'll also mention that I have master's degrees in city planning and urban design, and I have been published in the American Journal of Economics and Sociology on the subject of housing and gentrification. Pardon me from reading from my phone because my printer decided to fail on me before I came here, and also because the board was discussing this project through this morning, and I updated the letter shortly before that. To the members of the Historic Preservation Commission, the board of the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association is in support, 7-0 with 2 abstentions, one being your chair, of the request currently being made by the designers of the mixed-use apartment and commercial development being planned for 2613 Montgomery Street. The TSNA board urges the members of the Historic Preservation Commission to vote in favor of granting 1, an increased footprint allowance beyond the 5,500 square foot maximum, and 2, 4 rather than 3 stories within the permitted height of 45 feet. We believe that these allowances are warranted for the following reasons. Because Mayor Van Johnson and the City Council have made a commitment to support the expansion of housing options in Savannah, especially in the downtown and downtown adjacent areas, and this development is consistent with that commitment. Because an increased footprint and residential density is consistent with the redevelopment pattern currently occurring in the vicinity, CSCAD housing on Victory Drive and other large mixed-use developments in the MLK Montgomery corridor. Because the development plan is consistent with the goals set forth in the 2033 Downtown Savannah Plan, crafted by the Savannah Development and Renewal Authority and officially adopted by the Mayor and City Council on September 26, 2019. Because the development plan is consistent with recommendations put forth by the Mayor's own Housing Savannah Task Force. Because above all, the development promises to create new housing for downtown residents in a location-efficient manner within the walkable core of the city of Savannah, near existing bus stops, allowing future residents an opportunity for increasing affordability by living a car-free lifestyle, though this project does include the requisite parking amenities. It is important to point out that several board members decided to support these allowances specifically because of the mixed-use nature of the project and its ability to add vibrancy to its surroundings with ground-level commercial space. We would ask, if possible, that if these allowances are approved, that they be conditional on the continued mixed-use nature of the project, and that the project be required to return for these allowances to be reconsidered if ground-level commercial space is removed from the mix. Sincerely, the TSNA board. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
The vote that you stated at the beginning, that was a vote of your board.
Of our board.
Got it. Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to speak?
Yes, Madam Chairwoman, Josh Allen here today, also on behalf of the applicant. And I do want to echo part of what Jason said, because part, and specifically it should be read, part of the requirements that y'all as a board, I know y'all were alerted about setting precedent by one of the commenters online, but part of the variance and special exemption criteria is to ensure that what you are voting on is in keeping with the policies and ordinances as established by the city of Savannah. That is built into the request for a variance, whether it would be detrimental to the neighborhood and whether it would be in keeping with the goals, wants, and needs of the ordinance and comprehensive plan. And so, as Jason Combs just mentioned, what we are proposing is in keeping with the needs, wants, and goals of the city of Savannah. it is in keeping with trying to provide more housing for the city of Savannah, trying to provide more rental units for the city of Savannah, which if anyone has read the newspaper lately, or if anyone is trying to actively rent apartments today, knows that we have a growing concern. Part of what we're also trying to establish here, as Jason mentioned, is walkable, livable neighborhoods. I've been before MPC before with requests where, you know, we can eliminate the commercial on the ground floor. We can get the same density and do it, but it doesn't create as good of a project for the neighborhood, particularly as here, which is within the Montgomery MLK corridor zone. It is a special overlay within the city of Savannah. It has its own section of the ordinance where specific uses are enumerated and specific uses are prohibited. And part of it, it was part of the gentrification task force from 2007, I believe, that enacted that ordinance. And it was specifically tasked with revitalizing the MLK Montgomery corridors, which should be treated as different from other corridors in the city of Savannah, in part due to the lack of development that has occurred over the years. And so when we come here and ask for this special request and for the exemption, it is because this property is different from most of the other properties within the Mid-City District. The properties themselves, I believe two of them, are larger than the building footprints permitted in the district. And so for us to build on those properties, I believe two of the properties themselves are over 6,000 square feet. This property is under common ownership. This property does not have contributing buildings on it. For all of these reasons, this property is unique and not like other properties in the Mid-City District. And because we have limited resources to provide for housing in the city of Savannah, because properties like this don't come along every day, we are requesting for your approval of the special exemption and for the variance, because we do believe that they are both in keeping with the goals of the city of Savannah. And I'm happy to answer any questions that y'all may have.
Are there any questions?
And I have a question of staff.
Okay.
Say something else.
Oh, go ahead.
And it was just one additional point regarding the parking. I do not believe that this is considered legally principal use parking under section 9 of the zoning ordinance. This would be considered remote parking. Is within 300 feet of the principal use. It's not a standalone parking lot that requires special use approval. I know that we would meet all the requirements for fencing and buffering for the parking lot, but it's not a principal use parking structure as you would see in other areas of the city.
Staff, we have a question.
So one of the things that was mentioned during comments was use, and this group cannot mandate or make conditional use requirements of any part of the building. Is that correct?
That's correct. You cannot address use in any way.
So something could get, a design could get approved by this group and the use later change. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Even the MPC could add a use or rezone it or, you know, anything like that, the Planning Commission. And I apologize for using the term principal use parking lot. I'll just read what the standard says. In the Mid-City District, prior to this, it was called a principal use lot. Section 8.6.2, parking facility. Surface parking facilities approved after the effective date of this ordinance shall be screened from streets, excluding lanes, with a combination of masonry wall, decorative fencing, and or landscaping. A parking facility is permitted by special use only. My apologies for use of principal use parking lot.
Are there any other questions from the board? Hearing none, I will open for discussion and a motion.
Actually, I do have one question. As far as looking back on the history of the lot itself, it looks like it, you know, obviously has been used as a mechanic lot and an auto body shop and a variety of other things, which leads me to question ground contamination, all sorts of heavy materials, and is that part of the plan? Yeah, sure. That's why I'm asking the question.
So yes, we did do part one and part two environmental for it. We located tanks, but there was no contamination. And so we will be addressing the tanks in the ground. However, thankfully, there's no contamination at that site. And if you would permit for me to just say one other thing that I remembered and did not touch on, and it was just on the exterior, on the height. Okay, well.
Sorry, sir, we're at board discussion now. It's okay. Our turn to ask questions.
Great.
Is there any other discussion?
This is May Boley. I have to agree with staff that this is, I don't find the variances to be warranted other than for the objectives of the client. I think we have these rules in place to protect these neighborhoods for a reason. We need the integrity of our historic neighborhoods as much as we need new housing. And if we can't find a compromise in between those two, we need to work harder. So I would urge the applicant to find a way to respect the neighborhood's ordinances while accommodating the need for new housing in the city of Savannah.
Are you making a motion?
I will if no one else has any items for discussion.
Is there anyone who has a discussion?
I just had a comment. I think I'm not afraid to say, I think we really missed the mark on Victory Village, and I would even compare it to Indian Street to say, you know, there should have been an advanced proactive overlay for those areas. And, you know, the Victory Village in particular was once outside of the district, so that made that difficult. But, you know, to use that as any kind of precedent or inspiration, I think is a danger. And particularly on the boundary of a National Register district and looking at the threats of the downtown district and, you know, the compounding effect of multiple developments of this type. So it's really just a comment.
Okay. Now, any other comments? Do I have a motion?
Well, I guess I will make one more comment. I did a really, we all love the building, the inspiration building that we pulled up on 37th Street. In particular, the footprint of that building doesn't extend right out to the sidewalk in both directions. I think that's a really great cue. And I would encourage, you know, leaning deeper onto that inspiration as a large scale apartment building in a historic district, which does feel a part of the community. And on that note, I motion to approve staff recommendations.
I second that, Kirsten. Connor.
Rebecca, we will start with you.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Darren Bagley-Heath, approve.
May Boley, approve.
Thank you very much. Moving on to 118, 120 East 34th Street.
Thank you, Leah, one more time tonight. The applicant is requesting approval for demolition of non-contributing buildings and new construction, part one, height and mass, for two three-story mixed-use commercial and residential buildings for the property located at 118 and 120 East 34th Street. I'm going to pull it up on Street View, too. But these are the two buildings that we're talking about. I do not know why I closed Sages, but. All right. So they are both non-contributing buildings constructed outside the period of significance at this time. This is a contributing building, obviously contributing across the street, all the way down to the corner. And then if you'll recall, actually the same applicant, City of Savannah sold all this surplus property, and you all have recently approved what we were calling 1700 Grayton Street for the affordable housing project. Three stories, just for some visual reference. They're shown in their context elevations, although as you all know, those are not your reference for visual compatibility. It is the surrounding buildings, contributing buildings. So the existing buildings on the site, 118 and 120 East 34th Street were constructed in 1959 and 1960, respectively, and are non-contributing resources both in the national and local districts. Again, with regard to the criteria for demolition of non-contributing buildings, an evaluation is required for potential contributing status. And I'm hoping not to have to read all four of those again, but I'll paraphrase. Are associated with events, are associated with lives of persons, embody distinctive characteristics of an architectural style, have yielded or maybe likely to yield history or prehistory information. Of course, there's exceptional importance, which states that contributing buildings include a select group of exceptional resources constructed outside the district's period of significance. These resources possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association, and meet more one or more of the criteria that I described previously. Staff evaluated the existing buildings on 11/24/2021 as part of a survey at the end of last year and determined they did not meet the criteria for contributing or exceptionally important status. While the buildings do possess some detailing of mid-century, of the distinctive characteristics of the mid-century period, they do not possess higher artistic value and do not embody the distinctive characteristics of the mid-century period. Furthermore, these buildings do not represent nor match the development pattern for this particular area of the streetcar district. With respect to the new construction standards. Yes. Okay. With regard to visual compatibility for height, width, and scale, an existing adjacent structure is 2 stories and 40 feet in height. On the other side of the proposed buildings, but they're showing it. So it's not for visual compatibility context, but this is the building that we're talking about that was recently approved. There are several examples in the direct vicinity of the buildings of this scale and configuration along the street, the court apartments at 1712 Abercorn. You're familiar with this historic building. It is a U-shaped apartment building, historic. Here. So, with regard to the rhythm of the building, now the 2 new buildings are proposed to feature an appropriate percentage of frontage along the street facing the facade facing the street. The interior between the 2 buildings, which is actually better seen in the floor plan. I guess it's a detailed site plan, really. So you can see there's a interior courtyard here between the 2 buildings. With regard to staff finds this visually compatible. With regard to openings and projections, the ground floor of both structures will contain storefronts, certain percentage of storefronts, which will provide access to the commercial space. This is not about use, but more about design. And so as is common in the streetcar district, but a lot of our historic districts, there's a residential entrance to the side, which is basically de-emphasized. Typically to separate the commercial from the residential. 118 East 34th is to feature 4 covered porches on the front facade and 120 to feature 4 covered porches on the front, but in different locations. All windows are to be taller than they are wide and aligned vertically on the front facade. Staff finds the scale and configurations of the projections, entrances, and openings visually compatible. So the roof shape with the hip and the basically the front gable dormer are visually comparable as well. Again, it's similar, I would say, to the courtyard apartments, but this roof shape is pretty common in the district, especially on larger buildings. Very simply, ensure that the storefront glazing is inset a minimum of 4 inches, just from a, we always describe height and mass, and this might be a good refresher and information for the new board members. We always describe height and mass as if the building was shrink wrapped. So basically any insets or ins and outs and that sort of thing, which is why we always mention the insets of the windows and storefronts at this time, but usually end up reviewing it in part two. Staff is recommending approval of the demolition and for new construction part one with the following condition to be submitted with part two design details because the work is otherwise visually compatible and meets the standards, and that's to inset the storefront 4 inches from the face of the building. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Question.
Oh, during public comment. Yep.
Does the commission have any questions of staff?
I don't have a, Kirsten Connor, I don't have a question, but can you go back to the elevations so I can see that again? Thank you. Okay, I have one question. Kirsten Connor, on the elevations, is that where the dormer gable meets? Is the facade sticking out slightly? Is that what that is?
This, the dormer sticking out?
To the left on the side.
Oh, this is another dormer.
Okay, so but that bumped out. The first two stories, that's
yeah,
sticking out?
Yeah. So, well, I'll let them explain it more. You know, I'll let the petitioner address
okay.
that.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you.
Anyone else? Is the petitioner present?
Good evening. My name is Patrick Shea, and I'm the senior principal with Gunmeyer Hoff Shea Architects. I'm here this evening with Meredith Stone, who is the lead designer for this particular project. I'd like to thank the staff for working with us so closely on this to make sure that we meet all the rules, especially in regards to the frontage very precisely. I'd also like to thank my clients for not asking us to do too much with this particular site. When we were asked to take a look at it, it's right immediately adjacent to our office, which is actually a three-story building. When we were asked to look at it, he said that he wanted for something to be put in the place of the existing buildings that was as good as those were not so good. And so I think Meredith has tried very hard to meet that challenge.
All right, thank you, Pat. As mentioned, my name is Meredith Stone, and it's a pleasure to present in front of you guys today. I'll try to keep it very brief since we're at the day's end, but the proposed design is, as mentioned, two three-story mixed-use commercial buildings with parking along the lane and with a very important, what we consider a shared courtyard that converts the current drive path into a privately owned but publicly accessible pedestrian space. We thought that this was very good for the neighborhood and would encourage the more walkable community that is already present in this area. One of the things that we studied a lot was the treatment of massing and the ability for the massing of porches and balconies to assist with keeping buildings in scale of the pedestrian and scale of the street. So we studied a lot of the surrounding buildings and were very inspired by the approachability and the welcoming nature of steps that are that have spacious landings, as well as porches and balconies that help architecturally express the entrances. As mentioned, it is it's 12 total units, but it would be 6 residential units in each, with commercial on the bottom that is below the 2,500 square foot footprint for commercial standard. One of the things that we tried to consider is the commercial nature of the ground floor and separating the residential from the commercial visually by using larger panes of glass at the commercial and a more recessed entry at the residential area. Another thing that we looked at were the roof pitches in the neighborhood, and we felt as though using some of the roof pitches that we derived from the neighborhood's designs, as well as the dormers that, let me see if I can bring up our 3D views. So you can see along here that we've utilized dormers to try to break up the massing along the more lengthy western and eastern facades of the building and to give it a little bit more visual scale and friendliness. One of the big concepts that we were trying to go for is trying to make two buildings that felt like, you know, they were built to be next to each other, that were definitely inspired from each other, but were like architectural fraternal twins, as we called it. And so we studied just various iterations, and this is what we landed on. And another thing that we were really looking forward to is making sure that all of the residents and commercial users and businesses that are going to potentially occupy this space would also be able to have as much access to the outdoors as possible. So those are some of our concepts, and we appreciate you all listening to our design logic and look forward to answering any questions from you.
I have one question. Actually, in this image, it looks like at the roof. Is that recessed mechanical? Is that what that hatch is?
No, it's actually a design feature that we incorporated in order to provide some just some interesting lighting into the courtyard that uses, you know,
is like a sunlight sunroof. What's
yeah,
it called?
A sun filter. We can call it that. Okay. A sun filter.
So what material is it? Is it glazing?
In other words, the it'd be open to the sky, but you would be able to see the rafters in that area, so that sunlight can filter down through into the courtyard.
Okay. So is it going to be open to the ground, or is there going to be building underneath those?
That is open to the ground. I'll go back to our site plan. So you can see that there, the building footprint is actually set back to where the columns are right here. So all of that area is open to the ground.
And thank you for clarifying that. I know it's not required of you, but I'm just curious. I assume the dormer, obviously it's a serving an aesthetic purpose, but is it also essential for venting? And would you be amenable to other venting options, like through the soffit?
It's there primarily for aesthetic reasons. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that we've already completely studied the mechanical systems. We do have space around the building in order to be able to set the compressor condenser unit someplace other than on the roof.
Okay.
So we're open to other ways to provide ventilation, but we propose the dormers because we like them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Anyone else? Is there anyone from the, thank you. Is there anyone from the public that would like to make comment? Please come to the podium. Please identify yourself.
I'm Gretchen Reese. My husband is a developer of commercial spaces. I just had a question about parking. Could that be answered?
Sure. Because the commercial spaces that are on the ground floors of each of these buildings are less than 2,500 square feet, they're exempt from having to provide on off-street parking. All the parking is on the lane where it's supposed to be, and all of the parking is provided to meet the requirements for the apartments.
If that would be helpful.
Do we have anyone online?
Brian Arbick.
Brian?
Then we have another gentleman here too.
Brian, hold on a minute and let us get this gentleman who is in the galley.
Here's the parking in sight if you wanted to.
Okay. Please identify yourself.
I'm Richard Wofford. I'm a resident on East 34th on the other side of Court Apartments. In general, I'm excited about that transition, those buildings that are there, even though I know they provided a service to the community or, you know, for health reasons, the buildings themselves aren't that special. I'm curious about what you have proposed in terms of setback, because both on my block and on the other side of Drayton, all the buildings are set back quite a bit. Do these mirror the setbacks that these brick buildings have, or are they closer end of the street?
Generally speaking, they mirror the setback that was with the existing buildings.
So where those steps go up, they...
Yeah, so the steps that go up when you walk onto the porch, that's about the same as the porch where the existing buildings are.
Okay.
Come to the mic, please.
Yeah. Just one other thing about height. I couldn't tell from the drawings, is the pitch of the roof the same as the pitch where your offices are, or and across the street where the mosque is, or do they exceed that, those buildings?
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. I'll have to look at the drawing. I think they're about the same, generally speaking. But
the pitch is not exactly the same. The actual pitch, the slope of the building where our office is, which is right next door, is actually much steeper.
Yeah. Okay.
But this...
I think really what I'm after is the height itself.
The height. It is slightly taller than what is next door.
Right.
The
peak of the building roof that we're in is about 40 feet. 39 foot 11 and 3/8 inches. And the peak of our building is proposed to be 42 foot 9.5. So they're very, very close to the same.
And just this is the last question, but does the MPC...
The mic, sir, please.
Does the MPC deal with that height issues in the surrounding area? Like, does it have to match, or...
Is what this hearing is for. This is at the point that we will address the mass, the scale, the height,
okay,
and that kind of thing.
The zoning district allows 45 feet, three stories.
Okay.
So, but also visual compatibility of height with adjacent contributing buildings. So.
Okay.
Let's clarify.
Ryan, are you still with us?
I am. Thank you, Madam Chairperson. Ryan Arve, Historic Savannah Foundation. Just very quickly, our ARC does have concerns about the overall height of these projects. While not as dramatic in its scale as the project that you just heard, nonetheless, we do feel that these buildings are slightly higher than they should be. We understand that they fall within the ordinance. We're not disagreeing with that. But as far as visual compatibility goes, which is under your purview, we do feel that these buildings should reference the residential architecture of the area. Again, you can point to individual buildings like the Court Apartments nearby, but the overall character of the area, which is predominantly residential, should be adhered to. And we do request that the scale of the buildings be brought down some to be more deferential to its surrounding. Thank you.
Do you have a response?
Yeah, we've been very careful to be as deferential as possible to the buildings that are in the immediate vicinity. I can't make the Court Apartments go away. They're considerably taller. And the buildings across the street, many of them are, I don't know, I guess maybe you would call our building 2.5 stories tall rather than three. I don't know. But there are buildings across the street that are also three stories tall, or two and a half, with full stories underneath the roof. So, you know, there's not a way for us to bring down the height of the building without losing at least part of the third story. And we really don't want to do that.
Hi, it's Kirsten Connor. I actually disagree with Ryan on that. There are a few buildings in the area that do have a greater height, and I think it would be specifically for this project necessary for them to have that type of height. But I also, I find the gable dormer to, it looks like, I don't know if it's just the drawings, it looks like it sits very awkwardly because the ridge meets, it looks like it, the ridge of the gable meets the ridge of the main roof. So I was just curious if it does, and if there was potential for the main roof to be higher pitched in that case.
Which would make the building taller.
Correct, yes.
So we're willing to study that. We're willing to study that. But what we'd like to do is get the permission from part one. We tend to overdo it. You see our drawings. There's a lot more detail on them than what they have to for part one. But that's because we want to elicit these comments from you at this stage so we can make sure that we come back with part two just right. So if that's something that you feel strongly about and the board feels strongly about, then certainly I would invite you to make that a condition of your approval.
I think as the board, when it gets to that point, we should discuss it. But to answer my question, does the dormer ridge meet the ridge of the main roof?
No, it does not.
Okay.
I have a question. If you're finished.
Yeah,
that's okay.
Thank you.
Is
Oops, that's just the wrong building. There we go.
So it, to me, I think in just the front facade elevation, it just kind of looked like it did. So, okay.
Oh, I see. At the front.
Yes. Yeah.
I apologize. I thought you were talking about the side.
Oh, yes. The front.
Yeah, we do currently have it so that the ridge is common.
Okay. So that's something the board might discuss. I'll bring it up later.
Okay.
Thank you.
Maybe this will be your last. I have one more question for the petitioner. What's the floor-to-floor height?
Floor-to-floor heights. So the ground floor above the finished grade, which is a little bit different than what it is at the sidewalk, is 14 feet. Then the second story is 10 feet floor-to-floor, and the third story is 10 feet floor-to-floor. We don't really want to go any less than that because with floor trusses, we're already down to on the order of 8 feet for the floor that's in the middle. We'd like to try and see if we can continue to work on this to get 9-foot ceilings on the upper floors, but they're not super height stories at all.
Is this a grade level foundation? I mean, floor level?
It is, but one of the things, Madam Chairwoman, that's a little bit interesting and unique about this site is the lane is about 3 feet higher than the sidewalk at 34th Street. So the building is going to be, it's all going to be ADA on the ground floor. The building is going to be set in floor elevation by the lane. And that is why we have a series of steps like the other buildings that are in the vicinity, because 34th Street is kind of a valley.
Right.
And so that's why we have the steps that catch up. But the idea is not to have a crawl space, but to have, you know,
And I had one other question. Why are you, this is originally constructed a residential street. Why are you putting commercial uses on the bottom level?
Well, I get that it was most of the buildings in the area, excluding of course the two that we're asking to demolish, were originally built as residences. But the truth is that very few of them are residences. Almost everything on the block is commercial or institutional at this point?
Well, a couple of them have reverted back from institutional to residence.
Okay.
So, I mean, you've probably got 50-50 right there now on the block face, not on Abercorn.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
And it just seems, granted, under the square footage, you're not required to have any parking for that commercial space.
Actually, that dovetails.
And we don't address parking. I understand that. I'm talking about the density of use.
Well, I was going to ask how many units, residential units, are going to be in the apartment. So.
Okay. Well, you can ask that in a minute. But we have locations in that area that have small commercial spaces, such as yours, that generate large numbers of vehicles in any given day. What is you're getting the mass and scale and impact on an area?
Well, our hope is that by creating an area that's attractive to pedestrians, that it's going to end up being someplace that pedestrians want to come. Well, this Abercorn Street certainly would speak to the contrary. There are a number of businesses there that seem to be very popular, that are pedestrian-oriented.
They are popular, but they are detrimental to the residential life. And I'll turn it over to Darren before I say too much.
So, yes, how many residential units are going to be in the?
Six in each building for a total of 12 units.
Okay. And one parking space, by which one, I
one
relevant
space per dwelling unit.
Are they one or two bedroom units?
They're a mixture of one and two bedroom.
Okay, cool.
Again, we're going back to mass and scale. Are there any other questions? Okay, I'll open it up for board discussion. Does anyone have any comments?
I have one comment. You guys are going to hear this one from me a lot. When it comes time to vote on this, I would like to amend the text to say demolition or deconstruction of non-contributing buildings on the site.
Anyone? I'll second that. And
can I have a motion if we don't have anything?
Oh, well, my comment, I again, I know it's not required, but I do think the design would be improved and, in my opinion, more compatible with surrounding visual context without the dormers on the front facade.
I think I could agree with that. I just, the way the pitch of the main roof is to me and the height of that gable dormer, it's just doesn't look right.
Okay. Can we see staff's recommendations, please? Is there any other discussion?
Okay, then I'll go for it. Motion to approve staff recommendations with the addition of the phrase or deconstruction after the word demolition. May Boley.
Captain Levine, I second.
Okay, we will start with May.
May Boley, approve.
Darren Bagley Heath, approve.
Kirsten Connor, approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Thank you. Thank you. Okay, we will move on to the items that are have been given us as staff reviewed items. We don't have any discussion on them. They are simply we simply need a vote of acknowledgement.
Move Rebecca Fenwick, I vote to acknowledge the approved staff reviews.
Second.
May Boley, I'll second.
Rebecca.
Rebecca Fenwick, approve.
Kathy Ledvina, approve.
Besides number 34, Kirsten Connor approve.
You're recusing?
Yes, that is mine.
Yeah, look at your name right there.
Aaron Bagley approve.
May Boley approve.
Okay. Excuse me. We have, we move on now to other business. Leah, do you have any business?
Nope, nothing additional to the normal 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 reports that Olivia maintains for us every month on items that we've completed in the last month. So.
I do have two quick items of other business. One being, I have had a request to expand the subcommittee. I think that is something that we can discuss. We just cannot exceed a majority of the commissioner members.
It's Rebecca Fenwick. May Boley, are you still interested to be a part of the subcommittee?
This is the stucco subcommittee?
Oh, no, this is the everything subcommittee.
Oh, yes. Yes. I am still in
for the catch-all for now.
Yes.
So is that still a yes?
That's a yes.
Okay. So you now have members. Who are those members?
Darren Bagley Heath, Dr. Robin Williams, and May Boley if the group approves.
Okay. Thank you.
And Rebecca.
Yes.
And me.
Yeah, and Rebecca. Yeah, you. I am going to ask, based on discussion we had earlier with one of our first items, that the subcommittee might look into how we can get the information about historic standards out to some of these more undeveloped neighborhoods. Whether it is through approaching the real estate agencies or the building permit people or who. But, in this case, he didn't get building permits, so that wouldn't have helped. But there's a lot of misinformation out there, and I think it needs to be addressed.
We'll add an education community outreach heading.
Okay. Thank you. The nominating committee.
For your position?
No, for a vice committee, vice chairman.
We actually can't. Just last month, you all decided to wait a couple months until you got to know the board members better.
Oh, we decided to wait a couple of months?
Yeah, and okay. That's why it's right. Not on here.
Next month, you get that question.
And that's why it's not on here. Plus, as you know, we didn't know what the status was going to be of the other two openings, and Keyshawn Housie did resign after the last meeting. And we obviously still have one other opening. So you all thought you'd get a chance to know each other for a couple months before nominating a vice chair.
Are those positions still open?
Yes.
Yes. And city council, the clerk of council is aware.
Yes. Okay, one more thing. The next meeting is May 25th. The pre-meeting is at 2:30. The regular meeting is at 3:00. I need a motion to adjourn.
Just quickly, I will not be at the next meeting. I'll be out of town.
Okay.
Rebecca Fenwick.
Thank you, ma'am.
I motion we adjourn.
Does that mean we have to reschedule our... Yes.
We could also just pick a different day.
Well, we can do that too.
We will convene and loop Leah in, CC her.
Yeah.
Say just let me know, and I'll make
it. I have a second and a vote.
You don't need to vote to adjourn. It's just
Thank you. Thank you.